Hey there, Hoops fans! How you doing? It's your boy Jonathan Macri with you for another episode of NBA Takedown. Trying out something a little bit different today. I've been teasing this over the last few weeks. Finally got around to doing something which has been, frankly, my idea for this show since we got started. And that is to have some shorter episodes, mini episodes, focusing on one discrete topic that is a hot topic around the league. And with all due respect and love to my beloved New York Knicks, the hottest topic around the league right now is Trae Young. And where is he going to be? Because it became very apparent with the reporting from Shams Charania and Mark Stein and I think Chris Haynes on Monday that that future will not be in Atlanta with the Hawks. Shams saying him and the Hawks are working on a trade out of town. Mark Stein, of course, reporting that the potential destination that has become of most interest to all parties involved is the Washington Wizards, which is where I got my idea to bring on today's guest, Matt Maderno. If you've listened to the Knicks Film School pregame pod with Andrew Claudio, you've heard Matt on several times talking about the Washington Wizards. He covers Washington for Believe in Wizards. And immediately when I saw this, I figured, you know, there's going to be a lot of takes from Hawks people. I wanted to get the perspective of someone who covers the Wizards, because they're in a very interesting position in the league. Obviously, they have a lot of interesting young talent, as kind of Matt alludes to towards the end of this interview. It's more a bunch of Robins, and they don't have their Batman yet. And the thinking has been that they are just going to continue to try to get that Batman through the draft. And then here's this rumor that they're interested in Trae Young, who certainly has profiled like a Batman throughout his entire career, although it's obviously a question as to whether or not he could actually be one that is, you know, worthy of defending Gotham, as it were. So there's that interesting part of it. And then as we get into in the conversation, are you getting Trae Young to get Trae Young, or are you getting Trae Young to try to flip him for value? And then that leads me to the other really interesting part of this, which is, well, if there was a way to try to flip Young, flip Trae Young for value, why isn't there more interest in him right now? And I guess the part of this that is kind of fascinating to me, and we've obviously talked about this general concept on Takedown over the last couple months, is the concept of value in the NBA as it pertains to these certain types of players, players who have very clear flaws. You know, you might want to call this the Julius Randle corollary, where, you know, all-star, three-time all-star with the Knicks, two-time all-NBA level player. And then you turn around and you look around and you're like, okay, well, what team out there actually is going to want to trade for a guy like Julius Randle? And sure enough, the team that traded for him is a guy who had another very talented all-star, all-NBA caliber player with his own set of issues that we won't, of course, get into right now. But there are lots of these players around the league where very talented, clearly worth something to the team that they are on. But how much value do they really have when you have another team looking at them and saying, okay, do I want to make that affirmative investment? And that investment not only entails the role that they will have on my team, the minutes they will get, the by definition, how much I kind of need to structure things around them. And then, of course, the financial investment. And that's the other part that's interesting with Young. He has this player option for $49 million for next year, and then he could, in theory, sign a contract after that, and he surely will. What that contract is and how much it is worth, I think, remains to be seen, which, again, takes us right back to square one, which is where is the team out there that is going to eventually look at Trae Young and say, yes, we want to invest, you know, $40 or $45 or $50 million a year in him? Or are we going to be in a really, really interesting position, you know, a year and a half from now, where Trae Young's contract expires and there are teams out there who are like, yeah, sure, you know, we'll throw you $30 million for a year, you know, or $50 million for 2 years, but we're just not going to make a long-term investment. And it really does make him one of the more fascinating players that we have seen come along the NBA in a long time, because as of right now, and I said this on one of the many pods that I do recently, you look at Basketball Reference, he's got a 25% chance to make the Hall of Fame right now. Now, you may take that percentage and toss it out the window. But for a player his age to already be at that percentage is notable. And you would say, based on the fact that he's still relatively young, this is a guy who, based on the counting stats that he has put up, he has obviously been to a conference finals, you know, has made some all-star teams, you know, made an All-NBA team, the whole thing, like, is a really good player. Just the resume. This is a really good player on paper. And we have never, I don't think, seen a player like that, you know, get to a point before the age of 30 where, you know, in his contract, his current contract runs out before he turns 30, where the rest of the league looks at him and being like, yeah, you know what? We're not interested. So we are coming to a head here with Trae Young one way or another. And again, which is why I think it's so fascinating that a team who many people picked to finish with the worst record in basketball is now looking at him. And, you know, you ask yourselves the questions, why are they looking at him? What do they hope to get out of this? Is this just them kind of throwing shit against the wall and seeing what sticks? Or is there, you know, a larger plan in place here? And then what do they hope to ultimately get out of this in terms of, you know, something for their on-court product? Is this all about off-court stuff and what they can, you know, eventually maybe, again, try to flip him for, to the extent that they will be able to do that? So I wanted to get into all this who's someone who has some skin in the game. So without further ado, here is my conversation with Matt Moderno of Believe in Wizards about the prospect of Trae Young coming to his basketball team. All right, I am here with Matt Moderno of Believe in Wizards and Bolts Forever to talk to him about the latest bit of NBA news that has taken the league. I don't know if it's quite taken the league by storm, but I'm curious what his reaction to that is. Matt Moderno, how are you, my friend? Let me first ask you that.
I'm great. How are you doing?
I'm okay. The Knicks got their ass kicked last night, so I'm looking forward to talking about quite literally anything other than New York basketball at the moment.
I can relate to that a lot of nights, unfortunately.
Yeah, so let's get right into it. So Mark Stein reported, well, there was a lot of reports about Trae Young yesterday, how him and the Hawks are working together on a trade. Mark Stein, my buddy on Substack, reported that you know, the Wizards are apparently, you know, maybe interested. I want to know, what was your instant reaction when you saw that? And now about, 15 or so hours later, what is your reaction now?
This was an initial hard pass for me because it triggered a couple things there. Like, I think we have a cheap, potentially impatient owner. So I was worried this was we need to get someone to placate the owner. Maybe we're compromising the tank earlier than expected kind of move. That was my initial thought. Softened that a little bit to still don't love it, but could get on board with it for the right return. I assume this is the front office trying to do, you know, a thing where people try to trade the paperclip into a house after a couple of years through a series of trades. I think that's what the Wizards have been trying to do with Bradley Beal, is slowly flip him for a little bit more each time. You know, you turn into Jordan Poole, you turn Jordan Poole into a shorter expiring. Now you turn that shorter expiring into a guy you could maybe rehab for more assets in a year when his contract's expiring. And I think this is really just trying to roll things forward until they get something out of it. I'm not overly optimistic they can do that personally. I spent all last year with Wizards fans telling me they were going to get two first round picks for Jordan Poole, and they ultimately get a guy with an AARP card instead. And I'm just skeptical that they're going to get like, oh, we're going to get the New Orleans first round pick out of this deal. Like, I don't see that personally.
Well, I mean, look, we know there are examples of this. Probably the best one at the present moment is Michael Porter Jr. in Brooklyn, who obviously the Nuggets sent a future unprotected first round pick I feel bad saying offload him, but yeah, they kind of offloaded him.
Yep.
And now if I don't even know if the Nets want to trade him, if they did, they would probably get a nice return. What is your biggest fear as to why that plan would not work out if it was Trae Young in a Wizards uniform?
I think at least in Atlanta, like, you saw Trae around other guys that theoretically took some of the attention off of him, the way Jalen Johnson is playing. Like, you know, there's other pieces that should have made his life theoretically easier. And we've seen him, you know, in an albeit in, like, injury limited year, struggle a decent amount this season. I would think the Wizards don't really have anybody to the Jalen Johnson level, at least consistently. Like, Keyshawn George can do it for a few nights. Alex Starr can do it for a few nights. Trae Johnson can do it for a few nights. So if I'm a defense and I can key in on Trae Young, the only way he probably looks better is if he's got some crazy usage or volume, which takes away from my young guys getting that usage or volume. So it's like, do you shoot yourself in the foot, like, to do some of these things just to try to get some potentially minimal return on him? Now, if you could get a great deal and you get a first round pick in it, and you don't have to throw in any other young pieces, like, if I'm throwing in Kispert, who maybe I can get some seconds for, or, you know, other young guys to do it to sweeten the pot for them, like, we had to throw in Sadiq Bey, who I still would have liked to see in a Wizards uniform to go get
player.
To get rid of Poole. Like, I don't know. It just becomes sort of the floor washes out for me a little bit more quickly, I think, with that.
I think that makes a lot of sense. And you just brought up, though, an interesting idea for me, because I remember, feels like yesterday, that the Knicks were in this interesting spot where they had what we thought at the time was some intriguing young talent. It turns out that it was not all that intriguing. It was just not very good. I'm much more of a believer in some of the young guys that you have on your core, which I do want to get into before we get out of here today. But and then the notion of, like, that, and I remember the, you know, Knicks front office went out, got a bunch of veterans in the summer of 2019, where it's like, okay, we're going to, you know, put some gravity around these young guys. And the whole thing kind of blew up in their faces before they kind of rebooted again. You're in a situation where now, as you said, you don't have a Jalen Johnson there. You have these interesting young guys. So where is the line for you of, like, we do need a kind of sun for these other pieces to orbit around and make their lives easier, versus it's going to take away too much from what we should be developing with these young players?
I would try to get as close to the guy as you theoretically want to build that team around in the future, so you know that these pieces can play that eventual role. And I just don't think Trae is that guy I would want to try that with. Like, a lot of shots, a lot of foul baiting. He does get some assists, but is he really, like, making those guys better? I just haven't seen that from him in the limited amount of time I've seen him this season. And I know he's still pushing 10 assists, but it doesn't feel like he's raised the level of any of those other guys. So you've put all this work in trying to build a team with the blueprint of a contender, right? At least the pieces that fit some archetypes you'd want on a long-term thing. And if you're going to go through all this work for this tank, I just don't want to see them sell out short. So, like, I think if you do a move like this, you have to at least kick the tires on, is Trae Young a long-term guy to fill in that void? And, like, building around a 5'11 guy who doesn't defend anyone seems kind of to sell out a lot of the core values they've tried to, like, have in mind while they've put the rest of this roster together. So to me, it's just, he's not the guy. I mean, not that, like, Darius Garland is, like, a lockdown defender or anything like that. That's the other name. Like, he's a little younger. Like, he's a little more solid on the defensive end. He's not quite as high usage. Like, so you're not compromising quite as many of those things if you go that route, but you also probably have to give up more to go get a guy like that if you were available too. So it's sort of a tough trade-off.
That's actually a perfect transition, because I am not like probably most NBA fans of other teams, you know, not named the Hawks. And honestly, at this point, maybe some Hawks fans. Yeah. I'm not the biggest Trae Young believer. I, like you, am like, there's a ceiling on what a team could be. And I know I was personally moved by some of the comments that or maybe reporting we've heard of last couple of years that for as much as he does rack up assists, maybe some of his teammates have not always loved playing with him.
Exactly.
You know, maybe some of the defensive stuff where people have to bend over backwards to make up for this one guy who's always out there. It doesn't sit the best with people, you know, and at the same time, as I have those concerns, I do wonder, like, has it just gotten to a point in Atlanta where it, like, the ship has sailed?
Sure.
And might a fresh start for him, a guy who was the face of the franchise for up until very recently, this is a loaded question. Do you think that there is the sort of infrastructure in Washington where a Trae Young could come in and actually maybe make good on some of the things that haven't gone so well with the Hawks, and this rebuilding of the value could be a real thing?
That's such a great question, and I think it's great for two reasons. One, just the surface level reason that you asked it, and I think the answer is probably yes. Like, the regime change has really helped here, I think, from that perspective. They do have a good player development coach. Like, Poole was so bad the first year in Washington that I think people forget how bad he was to start out here. And they seem to figure out a way to make it work, to at least where he was a productive contributing member to a play, you know, a solid NBA front starting five at the very least. But beyond that, it's like, do you want Trae Young to really play and play well when you get here? And no offense to the Knicks fans that would be listening to this too, right? It's, I really don't want that pick to go from Washington to New York.
I was saving that one. Yeah.
No, sorry. spoiler. Like, that's in the back of my mind on everything here. Of, like, if you bring him here to try to rehab him, you need him to play well. But what comes with that, if he plays well, is you're actually hurting yourself potentially in the long term. So it's, you know, it's like the cutting off your nose to spite your face thing a little bit here. And that would make me a little worried. And the other thing for this front office is they've tried so hard to work on their image around the league. They've been kind to the Kyle Kuzmans of the world, trying to trade him where he wanted
that
to go.
They have.
Maybe holding on to him too long at their own expense to be able to send him to a preferred destination. So,
well, the Dallas thing, right? He didn't want to go to Dallas, so they didn't trade him to Dallas, right?
Exactly. So they're not going to bring Trae Young here and sit him on the bench for the rest of the year if he does not want to do that. And I think he maybe he's not a guy that makes you a playoff contender, but he's certainly a guy that could ruin the tank at the end of the year. So they have to have that in mind, and they have to have a discussion with him up front of, hey, you probably don't play the last 10, 15 games of the season when other people are resting guys in March. Like, we can't afford to do that.
So I'm sure you have looked at this table many times. I am currently looking at the table on Tankathon, which literally says, whatever pick it is, these are your odds. If, like, you're in the first position,
it's bookmarked on my homepage, if that tells you anything about my life. But
so for anybody who doesn't know, if the pick ends up, if the Wizards pick this year ends up falling out of the top eight, means if it's 9, if it's 10, if it's 11, it goes to the Knicks. Hmm. If the Wizards finish with one of the four worst records in the NBA, there is a 0% chance it converts. If they finished with the fifth worst record in the NBA, there is a less than 1% chance that it would convert. And then the odds go up and up and up. I would guess that the real danger zone is really if you somehow got up to the seventh worst record in the NBA, because that's 15-16% chance of converting. And I don't know if you want, it's like if you walked out of your house and there was a 16% chance you got hit by lightning, you probably would not leave your house.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I think it becomes too risky, and just, I don't know, you guys, like, as a Knicks fan, can relate to this back in the older days at the very least, less so now. But for Wizards fans, you just feel snake bitten at all times. So we miss out on Wembanyama by one ping pong ball. Like, we've had a couple years where they win 7 of 10 down the stretch and you end up dropping from the Shaden Sharp pick to the Johnny Davis pick. Like, we've shot ourselves in the foot so many times with these things. You just can't risk dropping to 7 or 8. That's catastrophic for this franchise. Like, they have to nail this particular draft. And even if your pick falls to 6, like, that's where you start to get in that, like, next tier of draft prospects. So, like, you need a top 4 pick here to really do what you need to do. And that helps you long term more than whatever incremental assets you accumulate from flipping Trae Young for some modest value.
And that's a good place for us to finish up, because we've talked a lot about this notion of getting Trey to flip him, and it's not, and you still want to retain your pick because to get that guy in the draft, how much of you is worried because, you know, the guy who drafted Trey Young in Atlanta now works for the Washington Wizards. How much of you is worried that they are, and I'm not suggesting this is the case, I'm just wondering what your opinion is, that this is a, no, we don't want to trade for Trae Young to flip him. We want to trade for Trae Young because we want Trae Young on our basketball team and we feel like we could get him at a bargain basement cost.
I mean, I think that has to be a consideration. Like, I think you wouldn't do this move if there wasn't at least some part of you that just, we at least just want to see how it looks. Like,
let's check it out.
Yeah, you know, maybe he turns into the budget Steph Curry we always wanted him to be in Atlanta, yeah, with this new revitalized young core. And maybe we do finally get him to play a little defense, or we have the defensive infrastructure to really protect him and he raises the floor for all these other guys too. Like, they have to have that in mind, or I don't think you do this move. So I just, again, I don't like that personally. That's not the blueprint of team I would want to see them do all this work to build. But if he's willing to come here and eventually transition into some of these other guys, like I really have a lot of stock on Trey Johnson. I've liked how he's looked recently. Can you play those two together in your starting backcourt? I think you would get cooked on the perimeter personally, and that doesn't appeal to me in the long term. Not that Trey Johnson profiles as a bad defender, but he's also not the makeup for Trae Young kind of defender either.
I am not, to be very clear, I'm not comparing Trey Johnson to Frank Ntilikina, to talk about names that ring a bell, but I remember distinctly the feeling of when Frank Ntilikina was still a rookie. I think it was Jared Jack who they had brought in and was like starting over Frank. And I'm like, what are you doing? You just drafted the kid.
Right.
And I would imagine there would be some part of you who would be feeling similar to that if you brought in a Trae Young to play next to a guy who literally just took with the sixth pick in the draft?
Yep.
Yeah. Last one, a lot of young players on the Wizards. I think you can make cases for all of them or why fans around the NBA should be paying attention to them. Give me one guy who, if there's an NBA fan listening to this podcast and maybe hasn't, for whatever reason, watched a ton of Washington Wizards basketball this year, who's someone that you're like, as a guy who watches this team day in and day out, this guy is worthy of your attention.
Keyshawn George is the guy for me. I just find him the most aesthetically pleasing of the group. He's averaging 15-5-5 this year after what was like a pretty poor on paper rookie season. Like, we saw flashes as people who watch him every day. The numbers didn't look great. Just under 50% from the field, over 40% from three. He play makes, he creates, he gets hands on everything defensively. He's only averaging about one steal and one block per game, but it feels like he gets a ton of deflection. So it's a great two-way piece. Like, I think he's a guy that if he keeps growing at the rate he's growing, could profile to be a Robin on a really good team in a couple years. If you can get your Batman, you could easily make the same case for Alex Saar and the jump he took in year two. That was probably the obvious one, but so I assume most people have at least seen some Alex Saar tape. So if you haven't watched much Keyshawn George, though, I think he's at least a fun watch.
Great advice. I like Alex Saar a lot, but like, who, if you don't like Alex Saar, that guy, he's going to be really good. Matt Materno, Believe in Wizards. Where can folks find you and your stuff?
At Twitter, at Matt Materno, same letters you see on the screen here. And happy to chat Wizards basketball with you anytime if you're a sicko like me.
I don't know whether I should end by saying I hope you do get Trae Young or I hope you don't get Trae Young. Selfishly, as a Knicks fan, I think I hope you do. So I'm sorry for that, but just keep it in a buck.